A lot of you may be ready to give up. Don't do that. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. I am frustrated. I am disappointed. I am confused. Most importantly, I am confused, but I am not giving up. The season is not over, ladies and gentlemen. It is not. If we lose to Dallas, we can have a different conversation, but the season is not over. This loss sucked. I don't really get it. We're going to make sense of it or try to over the next 4 hours with you guys with laughs. It's what we do here on the Midday Party with Rick and John. But, John, I am frustrated. I'm still gassed up as a Falcons fan. All hope is not lost. Our margin for error has shrunk to one. Our margin for error going into the game was two. Now it's one. You can lose one more game the rest of the year and have a safe chance of making the playoffs. That's where we're at.
Yeah, that's it. And unfortunately, you didn't capitalize on a weekend where two other teams in your division lost. Carolina got blown out on Thursday. Tampa Bay, well, they're Tampa Bay. They lose again. The Saints, the division is the Saints. I can now say safely nine games, the Saints will win the division. The Saints are either going to be the one or the two seed in the NFC. And somebody needs to take them out, because the last thing I need is a bunch of those folks running around here during Super Bowl week with their chest puffed out. And they're a really good football team. Take it for what it's worth. Confused as to what happened yesterday. I mentioned to John and Hugh, it really felt like the Twilight Zone. You're just kind of watching the game, and I'm down on the field. There's no atmosphere up there in Cleveland. I mean, those people up there, they don't care about the Browns. The ones that were there, they didn't get excited until the Browns went up, what was it, 28-10 or, 28-10 at that point. That's when they started getting into it. But the whole game, you're just waiting like, all right, somebody's going to make a play. Nope, didn't make a play. Somebody's going to make a tackle. Nope, didn't make a tackle. And you wonder, what the hell went wrong in a very, very winnable football game?
It sucks, man, but it's the Falcons Monday powered by Xfinity. Xfinity X1 will change the way you experience TV. How about Atlanta United, y'all? Moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals of the MLS playoffs. And I know after United won, the Red Bulls handled their business. They beat Columbus, and now it is Red Bulls and United in the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm just proud of the Five Stripes, man. Way to handle your business. Mm-hmm. They handled their business, ladies and gentlemen. And that's not always the Atlanta way in a playoff scenario, but it was for the Five Stripes. They did get pushed. They did get cheap-shotted. They did get challenged in this game, but emerged victorious 3-1, 4-1 in the aggregate over this completely despicable and irritable and unlikable team. Vila, bye. Morales, bye. There's another guy, his name's escaping me, who I don't like either, but these guys are cheap shot artists, man. They start losing the game, they start pouting, and they start coming at our guys with their cleats up.
Well, and that's what hurt them. They came at a guy with the cleats up. We got a penalty kick earlier to make it 1-0. They did something really dirty to Miguel Almirón.
Herrera.
Jumping on his back and kind of kicking out from under him. That was awesome. Well, Miguel, he clinched the match and the series with an unbelievable free kick there from, what, about 35 feet, 35 yards out, whatever it may be. He bangs that one in, and then you get a late goal as well. And you win 3-1. Joseph Martinez gets the late goal. I will tell you, that made the weekend feel about that much better. Like, I'm excited Atlanta United is moving on. What a dreadful, dreadful football weekend for me. Dreadful. I'm not even going to discuss Saturday night.
I mean, we could look at it like, good for Georgia Tech. They're 6-4. Yeah. They became bowl eligible.
They're bowl eligible.
I mean, sorry, it was at your team's expense.
Whatever. I've left exactly two games early in my life. One was the Peach Bowl against LSU, in which Miami lost 40-3, and late mid fourth quarter, I got, there's no reason to sit here anymore. The end of the third quarter at Georgia Tech, my kids were freezing cold. I knew I had to be up at 5 a.m. to catch a flight to Cleveland. I go, we're not coming back. Do I really believe that Mark Richt's going to pull something magical out of his rear end?
No. What was the score at the time you left?
27-14. And he's standing on the sideline, emotionless, play sheet in front of his face.
How many plays?
I don't know, three, maybe. I think he drew a new one up this
week. He's got to run a pass in reverse. That's all he's got.
Our whole offense the other day was, we had such an awful punt, it ricocheted off a Georgia Tech player's rear end, and we recovered it. Perry wasn't bad. Receivers dropped balls everywhere. Offensive line did, but whatever. You know what, Mark Richt, I was hoping that when he came here, Mark, and I'm talking to Mark Owens, he would go back to Athens and see his home and go, well, you know, I think I'm just going to stick around up here and just not go home. Just stay up here. Just let Manny Diaz coach the rest of the year.
What was the crowd like?
A lot of Miami fans. There were 8,000 to 10,000 of us down there.
So 10,000 Miami fans.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, 60-40 Tech to Miami, 70-30?
70-30, but it was nowhere close to full. I can tell you that much. Good sections were still available.
So what percentage of the building was full?
The lower bowl was somewhat full.
Right. Just curious how Miami fans traveled.
No, we had a good crowd. Big party on Friday night. Big tailgate at the student center, which was really good. I mean, that part was cool. See all my buddies from Miami was awesome. And then the game started.
I love these 7 o'clock games. That 7 o'clock game in Athens on Saturday was fantastic. I do got to give a big shout-out. And I know he's family, and we talk a lot about him, but we partied.
Johnny!
Johnny at Grindhouse. My God.
Shout-out to Johnny.
Jeez Louise, did we had a great time. They had a band. Jack Daniels was there. They had food. The bar was packed, and it was a great party. So after the game was over, we popped back up there for a post-game beer to let traffic die out and kind of get a base going. Rodrigo was hanging out.
Now, was that really Rodrigo?
That was Rodrigo.
I did not know he was that tall.
He's huge. I mean, I'm not tall, so, you know.
Yeah, but you're what, 5'8", 5'9"?
Come on now.
5'10"?
Come on. I can tell my wife. Give me an inch or two. 5'10 on a good day.
He looks like he's like 6'3".
Yeah, he was huge. Nice guy. And I felt like I don't fanboy out much. All right, we're blessed.
But you fanboy out to a kicker.
Yeah.
college kicker.
We are blessed
with
in this
glasses.
Business that we meet a lot of cool people. But I was sitting up there at the bar, and Johnny was like, hey, dude, there's Rodrigo over there. I was like, what is he doing here? He's like, comes here all the time, gets a burger after the game. He's like, I'm going to go say hey. Hey, Rodrigo, I'm Mark. It's good to meet you. Go Dogs. Going to get a picture. He was a cool guy. He was like, yeah, cool, no problem, Go Dogs. And that was it. But we're buddies now. I mean, what I meant to say was, me and Rodrigo are buddies after that.
You can give
your
number?
Your besties?
We did talk, now that we are BFFs, I talked to him, I said, all right, enough with the fake trickery plays, all right? Stop, Rodrigo, stop. We're 0-for-2 on those, all right? So just cut it out. You know, you just do what you do best and just put the ball through the uprights. And he was like, good talk, Mark. All right, I'll call you later.
Preacher man, I told you. Told you on Friday, your boys going to be in the game. Not only were they in the game, they kicked the crap out of the
Patriots. Well, yeah, you said they were in the game. I mean, I appreciate your faith in the team, but nobody saw that coming.
No.
Nobody.
No.
I mean, that was the first time we've beaten the Patriots since 2002.
Really?
Yes. Steve McNair.
Now, was that still Drew
Steve
Bledsoe?
Steve McNair was the quarterback last time we beat them.
Wow.
That's how long ago it was.
May he rest in peace.
Rest in peace to the great Steve McNair.
But the fact that I like the fact how Vrabel talked about in the post game that they ran the throw to the quarterback like the Patriots tried to run where Brady fell down, but our quarterback actually caught the ball and kept on running, had to get tackled. That's what's up.
The sports world never stops. So if you missed anything, Rick and John are here to tell you what's up.
What's up, Holmes?
Matt looks, pumps, now comes back, and he'll be sacked. The ball is loose, and Garland had it momentarily and eventually recovered by Jamie Collins.
Well, and that's how the game ended up. Last meaningful play of the game, Matt Ryan strip sack, fumble, Cleveland recovers. Browns win 28-16 over our Atlanta Falcons. Falcons fall 4-5 on the year. We're going to break this down with phone calls and everything else. There are so many things that went wrong in this football game, but the one that stands out to me more than anything, you never sniffed Baker Mayfield. Now, the plan for Freddie Kitchens was 3 steps and get it out of the hands of Baker Mayfield. We never made them uncomfortable ever. I believe he started 14-for-14 on the game. The first time he threw an incomplete, he was trying to throw in the end zone to Jarvis Landry. He never was uncomfortable. The Browns were never out of rhythm offensively, and the Falcons played from behind most of the game, and it cost them a football game.
Well, I'm going to have a tough talk with Dan Quinn in the 10-20 segment, so stay tuned for that. I thought there was some terrible decision-making in the second half of this game. Ladies and gentlemen, the comeback was there. I'm going to explain that as well in our next segment. And I'm going to give you this stat that after the Chubb touchdown, so it's 28-10 at 8:45 of the third quarter. 28-10 at 8:45 of the third quarter. They don't score another point.
Right.
Not one. They ran 13 plays and had 45 yards on their next 3 drives. Mm. The comeback was there. And we weren't able to do it, and I think our coach has gotten in the way of that comeback, John. There it is, about a 10-minute tease for you. I will explain in great detail at 10:20. I got to give a major shout-out, John. I was in Tuscaloosa for the Bama game against Mississippi State. Huge shout-out to Deborah. Mm-hmm. Okay, Deborah is the mom of Summer. She gave up her ticket so that me and Charity could go to the game. I forget who else gave up a ticket, but we went with Mike, Summer's dad, Summer, and then me and Charity. So 2 Bama fans had to give up tickets for us to go.
Right.
Love you guys. Thank you. The RV was sensational. The tailgate was sensational. people in Alabama are really cool. They're very confident, but they're not cocky. But
they're
very like laid back, welcoming, generous people. We bounced it from tailgate to tailgate. But I got to give a shout out to Mike and Deborah. They were phenomenal.
Well, we got to give a shout out to Atlanta United. They move on to the Eastern Conference Finals. They dispatch of NYCFC 3-1. The final there. Martinez had two goals, and Miggy has a goal as well. They give up a late free kick at the end of the first half, which made it a little bit tight. But they hold on. They win 3-1. They're going to move on, play the New York Red Bulls. Now, there's a week off. They don't play until after Thanksgiving because of some international friendly. The first leg of the aggregate will be here in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I guarantee they're going to have everything open there. There'll be 70,000 plus, and I might have to go into the corner office and make sure we can get some hookups for that game.
Shout out to Brad Kazan. Did not have to make a save in the first win. He was standing on his head yesterday. They had a couple of headers in close, and they headed it right at him, made the save. But he had an unbelievable save on Castellanos when it was a 2-1 score. Should have been 2-2. That's a very high percentage shot from Castellanos, and Kazan absolutely robbed him. Loving it. The five stripes are moving on. I don't understand why they wait 2 weeks to play and then play two games in 5 days against the Red Bulls.
Because of the international friendly. That's all I can say.
I don't really understand the flow of that, but it is what it is, man. Shout out to the Dogs, dude. Mm-hmm. Huge victory over Auburn, obviously, 27-10, John, as we continue what's up. A couple of really impressive things to me. Holding Auburn out of the end zone in quarters 2, 3, and 4, they suffocated them. And our Dogs, against a good front seven, went for 303 rushing yards, Swift a buck 86, and Holyfield 93.
As we mentioned, Georgia Tech also wins 27-21 over the U. They are now bowl eligible, are the Jackets. They've got a couple of games left on the season. Hawks lose last night in a wild game against the Lakers, but another double-double for Trae Young. I'll be honest, I was not up that late watching.
I watched
some highlights this morning. Dude, I got home from Cleveland after getting up at 5 a.m. yesterday to fly to Cleveland. I hit the bed at about 9:45. I was asleep by 9:46.
Not mad at you. I forced myself to stay up. I was exhausted, too. Watched the Cowboys and Eagles and watched the Hawks and Lakers. Listen, Trae Young made the right play at the end of that game. You're getting action to the hoop. You've got a guy, your go-to guy with his go-to shot. That floater is money from Trae Young. Tyson Chandler made an unbelievable defensive play to get up at 41 years old or however old he is to block that shot. And 41. By the way, Hawks fans, I know you're butthurt. It was not goaltending, okay? They got the call right. And LeBron James misses two free throws. This keeps happening, John. Mm-hmm. I've got more on that in Tell the Truth Monday at 1 o'clock. But he did have the follow flush. And Vince Carter had a dunk, John, late in the game to make it 106-105 Hawks. Like a go-ahead, maybe game-winner dunk from Vince Carter. And then a lot of stuff happened after that. But shout-out to the Hawks. It was a fun watch, man.
Hey, elsewhere, NBA news real quick. Jimmy Butler was officially traded to the 76ers. This one kind of came out of nowhere. Second-round pick, Dario Saric, Robert Covington. Minnesota did not get all they could get in this deal.
So, John, the Timberwolves turned Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and Zach LaVine, a walking 30-point score, into Dario Saric, Robert Covington, and a second-round pick.
Terrible.
How'd they do there?
Horrible.
Okay, now let's advance this. How is Jimmy Butler going to do with a guy like Ben Simmons who refuses to work on his game and put in the extra effort it needs to win? There's drama coming in Philly, too.
Hey, when we get back, we ask, did the Falcons take the Browns too lightly? We've got some audio that you don't want to miss next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
As we get into the second half and, you know, final stretch of the season, in November and December is when you have to play your best football as a team. And today wasn't that for us, but we got to get back to work tomorrow and make sure that that's the case as we move forward.
Matty Ice was solid yesterday, but it wasn't good enough. Our Birds fall 28-16 to the Browns. Rick Hamlin and John Michaels on a Falcons Monday powered by Xfinity. Xfinity X1 will change the way you experience TV. Right around the corner, 5, 6, 7 minutes from now, I'm going to talk about some of Dan Quinn's failings in the second half of this game. But to John's point, Devondre Campbell, and here's the thing. John and I are confused. Falcons fans are confused. What the hell happened? How did we lose to Cleveland?
Right.
Why were we doing this? Why weren't we doing that? We just made a million mistakes yesterday. We're confused. So maybe this is it from Devondre Campbell.
To be honest, we didn't come out with the energy we've been coming out with the past couple weeks, you know. And, you know, I feel like it was one of those situations where, like, as a team, we were just like, it's the Cleveland Browns, and we didn't take them serious. You know, it's the NFL, and every week is championship week. And today we just didn't get it done.
That bothers me. You're a 4-4 football team, and that's from the postgame show. Dave Archer did the interview on Falcons Radio Network. For him to say they're the Cleveland Browns and we didn't come out with the energy that we needed, anybody in this league can beat you. The Buffalo Bills just won yesterday by 150 points. Sorry, Sean, your Jets stink, and they cost me a pick. You can't – if you're 7-1 and you come out and you sleepwalk a game, all right, no big deal. You're still in first place. You're 4-4. You're not in the playoffs as currently constructed. You know it's going to be an uphill battle the rest of the year. You got to go to Cleveland and play the same way you did against Washington, like your hair was on fire. And it didn't seem – I told you yesterday, it just felt like the Twilight Zone. It felt like there was just a malaise the entire game. No energy, no push, nothing. And then all of a sudden you look up and you go, we've just lost a football game to Cleveland. Like, how the hell did this just happen? Hearing that gives you a little insight as to why this may have happened. And that actually angers me a little bit, Rick.
Well, if you unravel that, okay, so let's just say we took Cleveland lightly. Why did you take Cleveland lightly? What went on during the week? Was the preparation where it needed to be? Did coaches not do their jobs? Or was it just players kind of in a funk? And, you know, we have to – it's an excuse. I'm not going to, like use this to justify what happened yesterday. But were our guys maybe a little out of gas yesterday? You have fought like hell to get out of this, you know, 1-4 hole. But you got a bye week in there.
Yep.
So, like, you know, like New England yesterday. And to Preacher Man's point, we were talking to the bullpen. His Titans beat the Patriots yesterday. You got to give a bunch of credit to the Titans. They kicked their butt. But I think New England was a little out of gas yesterday. Okay, their bye week is next week. New England. They had won 6 or 7 in a row, it was. So, like, they were rolling. You know, you had no Gronk yesterday. I kind of think New England was a little bit out of gas. Our Falcons do not have that excuse. So, yeah, John, that is alarming. Let me break down Dan Quinn's failings here. John, the comeback was there for us. The comeback was there.
Yep.
So we hold Cleveland to 0 points after the Chubb 92-yard touchdown. That was at 8:45 of the third quarter. They did not score another point. That's a quarter and a half of football where we hold them off the board. To wit, the drives after that, Cleveland went 6 plays, 18 yards, 4 plays, 23 yards, 3 plays, 4 yards, 13 plays, 45 yards, no friggin' points. So if we take a field goal down 18, instead of throwing that stupid pass to Sauber, now you're down 15. You come back, you score the Hooper touchdown, you don't go for two. And by the way, that was awful. You're down 12, you don't go for two. You take the PAT and you make it an 11-point game where you need 3 plus 8. It's simple math. Every NFL coach does that. So if you get the 3 down 18 instead of the pass to Sauber, and you get the 7 for the Hooper touchdown, John, you would have been down 8 points with 3:52 to go
and
the Rock at your 19-yard line. The comeback was there. Dan Quinn got in the way of it, John.
Well, my problem was on third, more than any of that, and you laid it out beautifully. My problem with that was third down, Tevin Coleman scored. I get it. You don't want to waste a timeout potentially for one of those muddled plays down in the end zone. You got to take a look at that at that
no
point.
No question.
Have to take a look at it, and they didn't. Fourth down the ball, and anybody watching us on watch929thegame.com, the ball was literally this far, Rick, from the end zone. I'm standing on the goal line looking at it. You can't get any closer, and you go, shotgun? Are you kidding me? Matt Ryan, 6'4". Alex Mack is a Pro Bowl center. Matt, reach over. I could not believe they went shotgun on 4th and 2 inches. If you don't get in, so be it. I'm not throwing the football. Their original read, I think, was to Logan Paulson, who was covered, and that's why he went back of the end zone to Saubert. You got to get that in. If you're going to go shotgun, to your point, you might as well kick the field goal, but I'm backing up the third down. I'm going ahead and reviewing, did Tevin Coleman get in or not? If I lose the challenge, so be it. It's worth it to me to potentially cut the game at that point to what would have been 12 points.
It's a great call. And so there were a lot of failings here, man. But in terms of you know, you're down 18 and you go for the touchdown there. I got to be careful with what I say here.
Just breathe it out.
I'm frustrated because I know you want the touchdown. I know it's been a frustrating day in Cleveland. I know you want to dent the end zone. But the smart move, John, is taking three. You have a ton of football left. You take three, now it's 15. You get an 8, you get a 7. And as I said, these stops would have been there. Mm-hmm. It's not like Cleveland powered down. Our defense, that was getting their butts kicked, decided to start playing and rally and play some good football, and they did. And the offense did not back it up. And I think if we're playing the blame game right now, I put probably the most blame on the coaching staff than I do on the players. And the players were not ready for prime time. The Sanu fumble sucked. Ishmael leaving the area on the Nick Chubb passing touchdown. Mm-hmm. You have Riley and Campbell just forgetting about Duke Johnson on his touchdown. Like, there are player failings all over the place, but the comeback was there if our coaching staff did not get in the way.
Yeah, I still want to go back to what Devondre Campbell said, and we're going to play this soundbite quite a bit today, because when I hear him say we may have taken the Browns lightly, that's frustrating. Matter of fact, Mark, play that again if you don't mind.
To be honest, we didn't come out with energy. We've been coming out with the past couple weeks, you know, and, you know, I feel like it was one of those situations where, like, as a team, we were just like, it's the Cleveland Browns, and we didn't take them serious. You know, it's the NFL, and every week is championship week, and today we just didn't get it done.
It's the to quote him exactly, it's the Cleveland Browns, and we didn't take them seriously. I don't get preseason, you want to say that it's the Cleveland Browns and we didn't take them serious? I appreciate the honesty and the candor from Devondre Campbell. You don't get that very often. I appreciate Dave Archer getting that question out where you can hear it. And we'll hear the interview in long form coming up a little bit later on. But when I hear something like that, I don't know where the disconnect is there for the Cleveland Browns or for the Atlanta Falcons with the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland is not Cleveland from last year where they were getting blown out. You've had a team that's gone to, what, 4 overtime games? They played Pittsburgh to the wire. Yeah, they gave up a bunch of points and a bunch of yards to Kansas City a week ago. Everybody's given up yards.
They were in the
points.
Game. It was 21-15 right. In the third quarter against the Chiefs.
You couldn't go up there and say, that's the Cleveland Browns. You're not playing the Citadel this week. You're playing a viable NFL team with a rookie quarterback who's pretty damn good. And watching him in warm-up, Baker Mayfield is going to be a stud in this league. And a running back in Nick Chubb, who now that is getting the ball every game, you're seeing what this guy can do. Like, that frustrates me to hear that from one of the players.
The Nick Chubb touchdown run, and give him credit, should never have happened.
No.
It was a Pop Warner touchdown. Okay, you know how there's the one kid on the football field that's just better than everybody else, and he runs the they kick off to him and he does the zigzag kick return touchdown. Mm-hmm. where he runs like 100 yards, but he actually runs 250 yards because he's going back and forth and just making everybody miss. That was the freaking Nick Chubb touchdown. Somebody make a play. Nick Chubb, I get it, he's got juice, he is quick, and but does Nick Chubb have, like, run away from an entire defense speed? I mean, maybe he does. But to me, make a damn play. He went 92 yards mm-hmm. on you. Longest touchdown run in Browns history, right?
Yes, and the longest touchdown run I believe the Falcons have given up, at least in the last 25 years.
Didn't Jim Brown play for the Browns?
Yeah, he did.
Arguably the greatest mm-hmm. player of all time at any position. And we gave up the longest TD run to Nick Chubb? I mean, come on, man. Come on, man. Do you agree with me? That is a Pop Warner play. He made us look like children on that play. Somebody make a play. You can't go 1-11 and go 92 yards. Well, if you're a playoff team, you can't let that happen. A
couple of things. Duke Riley doesn't get the fill that he needs in the hole. That's supposed to be about a 3-yard gain. KZ, who comes up, and DeMonte KZ has played great this year at safety. He came up too fast. That's one, and I know Arch talked about this during the game. You got to slow play it. He's already burst off 30 yards. You've got to make sure you slow him down in some way and you get him to the ground.
Angle it, right?
Angle. Desmond Trufant's playing the sideline. He gets flat-footed, and by the time he turns to run, Chubb's 5 yards past him, and he could never could catch. A couple people texting in going, hey, it was Hooper that they should have reviewed. That was the following drive that Hooper, I thought, scored as well.
He did.
The previous drive, when we didn't get it on fourth down on the throw, was Tevin Coleman on a dive on third down that he didn't get in. That's the one
Hooper
we're talking
got in, by the way.
They both got
it. He was right on the goal line when he caught that ball.
Hey, by the way, you could join 92.9 The Game this Friday at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. It's going to be Dukes and Bell broadcasting live from 2 to 7. Plus, have a Dukes and Bell Hey Man AL on draft at Twin Peaks. Head to 92.9 The Game for the full list of stores that have Hey Man AL. We come back. We read between the lines.
We call it an ugly loss. Dan Quinn says, just a bump in the road. Plus, you know the holiday season is here because people are fighting in the parking lot. We'll explain next. Sports Radio 929 The Game.
All right, here we go from the Kia Studios on a Falcons Monday, powered by Xfinity. Xfinity X1 will change the way you experience TV. Top of the hour, right back into the Falcons complaining and bickering and moaning, and because that loss sucked. We'll continue to try to make sense of it for you. And obviously the quote about Devondre Campbell and, you know, we didn't take Cleveland seriously, that's really bothering me and John. But our coaching bothered me more in that football game.
Mark Owens, we turn it to you.
And Dan Quinn says, ugly loss, but just a bump in the road.
As a team, we took a step back today, and that's tough. So we're fighting for consistency, and for a couple, 3 weeks, you know, we've certainly shown improvement, but we didn't follow through with that today.
They didn't, and that's the rough part. You won three in a row. You're feeling good. You know, you played your best game of the year last week against the Redskins. You played arguably your worst game of the year against the Cleveland Browns based on the talent level of the opposition. I know Pittsburgh steamrolled you. Pittsburgh's a better team than Cleveland. There's been one of these losses every year under Dan Quinn. First year, it was the San Francisco game out there, and you go, how the hell did you just lose to Blaine Gabbert in San Francisco? Last year, it's the Dolphins. How did you blow a 17-0 lead against Miami? This year, it's Cleveland. The difference was, year one, you weren't making the playoffs anyway. The Super Bowl year, I guess there really wasn't one of those losses.
Chargers, maybe?
Yeah, I guess the Chargers. Because
the Chargers was kind of like, huh?
Yeah, it's like, how the hell did you lose to them? So, yeah, each one of the 4 years, there's been a what-the-hell-just-happened loss for Dan Quinn.
Do you, John, were you freaking out when Dan went for two?
No.
After the touchdown?
Nah.
Why? You don't go from 12 to 10. You go from 12 to 11.
You want me to be honest? I didn't think we were going to have enough time to come back anyway.
Yeah, but that...
Because then there's only like 6 minutes
left.
Yeah,
but Dan Quinn can't think that way.
I get it.
The comeback was there. We could have had the ball back at 3:45 of the fourth quarter, down 8 points. Comeback was there, ladies and gentlemen.
Remember, when they went for two, there's only 6 minutes left in the game, and you're down 12. So you weren't going to get it back with 3:45. Or it might have only been like 4 minutes and some change then anyway.
No, but if you take the field goal when you went for it on fourth down and combine it with not going for two, you would have had the ball down 8 with 3:52 to go.
My point is, though, when they went for two, they had already eschewed the field goal. So that was out there. At that point, I was like, whatever. They got to get a two-pointer somewhere along the line.
So before we throw Devondre Campbell under the bus and have the city turn against him, here's more of his post-game interview with Dave Archer.
Just to be honest, we didn't come out with energy we've been coming out with the past couple weeks, you know. And, you know, I feel like it was one of those situations where, like, as a team, we were just like, it's the Cleveland Browns, and we didn't take them serious. You know, it's the NFL, and every week is championship week. And today we just didn't get it done.
You guys sub a lot of people in on defense. I know there's a lot of conversation, a lot of communication has to happen in that situation. Did you get a couple unscouted looks that were a little bit different than you were prepared for?
Oh, they gave us a few unscouted looks, but we went to the sideline and made the adjustments necessary. But like I said, I think it was more of an energy thing. You know, like, we just haven't came out. We didn't come out and play today the way we've been playing the past couple weeks.
So what's your message now to get ready for this next week of the Cowboys?
As a defense man, my message is just, we got to really come out with some energy every single game. Like, we can't afford to take any steps back, and today we took a huge step back.
That's one of the realest sound bites we have heard in a long time out of a player from this organization, and I like it. I like that Arch continued to push. What's the message for this week? Devondre kept it real. Now, you're going to get some energy potentially with Deion Jones coming back. And there is no more holding him and let's snap count. If Deion is 100% healthy to play, I need Deion to play.
Well, here's the thing with the Deion Jones return. We can't have stand around and watch syndrome.
Nope.
Okay? Like, Deion's coming back. He's your best defensive player. All right, we're good now. Deion Jones is back. He'll make all the plays. The 10 other guys have to take their game to a totally next level to beat Dallas. Dallas, by the way, Cooper's looking great for them. Amari Cooper, he is helping that offense. He is shifting defensive attention away from the line of scrimmage. Zeke Elliott is now getting busy. It's no coincidence. Zeke Elliott is literally jumping 10 feet in the air and hurdling dudes.
Right.
The dude was standing up and Zeke Elliott jumped over his head. I'm just saying, we got Dallas coming to town. It is a death game of, like, the movie 300 proportions, okay? If you lose this game, you might as well fall on the sword. All chips in the middle of the table, Mark Owens. All cliches in play.
right, let's move to the SEC. Georgia getting the win, excuse me, over Auburn. Kirby Smart talks about how they got better.
If the message is clear to them that you've gotten better for three straight weeks, you've played pretty good football teams, you just got to keep doing that. That's all we can worry about. We don't control anything else. All we control is how we play. And if you control that with your behaviors, we talk about behaviors all the time. Good behaviors create, I'm not talking about going to bed at night. I'm talking about studying film. I'm talking about rest. I'm talking about recovery. Those are the things that are going to help us be a better football team, and we're growing a lot of young players up.
So a big win for the SEC East champions, beating your rival, the Deep South's oldest rivalry, two in a row. That's 7 out of 10 against Auburn. You want to celebrate. You want to get excited, but this is why I love Kirby. He says, can't celebrate too long. You know why? Because you can't look past UMass.
I'm really focused on UMass and trying to celebrate this one for about like 3 hours. If I could get that in, that would be good. Just 3 hours is all I want, and then I'll go to recruiting in UMass. But we're really worried about this team getting better. I shouldn't say worried. I should say that's the goal.
By the way, first line coming out for the game, 43-point spread.
Yeah. Guess what? You're going to see a lot of Justin Fields. You're going to see a lot of the third-string quarterback. Hell, I might take some snaps this week for Georgia.
All right, Mark. Giving your coach a whole bunch, I should say our coach, all right? He's our coach, Kirby Smart. But Kirby Smart contradicted himself in that soundbite. I don't know if anybody heard this. That's why I'm Sports Detective Rick Camlin. Because what he said was, this week, it's about recruiting in UMass. So he just explained to you that he is distracted with recruiting and will not be burning the midnight oil on UMass. You see what I'm saying? He is going to treat this as a bye week and a scrimmage with the lights on and popcorn popping. And, oh, by the way, we're going to hit the recruiting trail because we've been losing some 4 and 5 stars.
And this is the week to do it, too. This is the week you have the time to give those recruits a little proper attention. I got no problem with it. I'm not saying that they're going to ignore UMass.
I'm just getting sarcastic.
But, no, I see what you're saying, and I see what he's saying.
That's UMass. All I'm going to That's all I'm doing.
Can't look past anybody.
He just admitted that he's looking past UMass. He said he's going to be recruiting this week.
4 o'clock kick.
I love it.
Random kick.
Kirby, don't change a thing.
Random kickoff.
Except you're coaching against LSU.
One more for you. The holidays, Thanksgiving's week away, week and a half away. Holidays are pretty much here. Christmas commercials are rolling.
No, they're not. Pretty much already here.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not.
Apparently, only things that are being sold for Christmas this year are cars and cell phones. It's like the only two Christmas commercials.
They're the big ticket items.
Yeah.
So how do you know that we're getting ready or we're already into the holiday season when people start fighting over parking spaces? This one at a Home Depot. Oh, and by the way, earmuffs, if you got the kids in the car, turn it down for about 60 seconds because this lady goes off.
I can't park my car. My daughter has to get in. We won't move his car. Move it. You parked it too close.
I'm actually hugging this side a little too much.
I'll take a picture.
Pero estás loca.
You.
Oh.
You.
En español, por favor.
Don't call women crazy. You're crazy. Look at you. Oh, driving a car like that, you're not happy, man. You're an old fart.
I am.
You're too old to be driving a car like that. It's too big for you.
I'm in this.
Yeah, I bet you are. You drive
original.
Like you, little tiny.
This is
so you
original.
Need that. That is your, isn't it? You proud of your old, but it's your car, it ain't you. Yeah, I can't get it up. Viagra, my. You stupid. Now you're getting off fighting with a woman?
No, I'm not fighting.
You're getting off fighting with a woman, little.
I'm not fighting at all.
Go on, man, because I'll take you down, you son of a. Anytime.
That's threatening, but it's not. I'm just.
Park that correctly.
I'm just being entertained, frankly. I'm in disbelief.
Wow. Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
The holidays are here. Merry Christmas and bah humbug.
Beep. I love when he goes, Espanol, por favor. Like, you're not going to curse me out in English. Do it in Spanish.
I liked what he said. You're actually entertaining me.
Yeah.
This is funny.
Pretty funny. By the way, that's how our parking deck sounds every morning down here for the 18 spaces that are still available at Colony Square. We get back into the Falcons conversation, but don't forget, Falcon fans, you have a chance to save up to $100 at Kauffman Tire this season when your Atlanta Falcons score a touchdown. For each quarter, the Falcons score a TD. Fans save $25 at any Kauffman Tire store the next day. Yesterday, the team scored in 2 quarters, so fans will save $50 on a set of 4 new select tires today only. Go to kauffmantire.com or your local Kauffman Tire store for the details. Kauffman Tire, the official tire retailer of the Atlanta Falcons. We'll break down the good, the bad, and the ugly for the Falcons in a tough loss next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I am.
You're too old to be driving a car like that. It's too big for you.
I'm in this.
Yeah, I bet you are. You're looking, you drive like
Sports this. Radio 92. It's Monday.
And time to take a look back.
This is Falcons Monday.
Everybody got to lock in right now.
Our Falcons play here.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
As we get into the second half and, you know, final stretch of the season, in November and December is when you have to play your best football as a team. And today wasn't that for us, but we got to get back to work tomorrow and make sure that that's the case as we move forward.
It's a new hour of the Midday Show with Rick and John. That is Matty Ice. He's our QB, and he's preaching the truth. Just wish we would have come a little bit more correct yesterday at 1 o'clock Eastern time. It is a Falcons Monday powered by Xfinity. Xfinity X1 will change the way you experience TV. Football is a weird game, ladies and gentlemen. You think you got it all figured out. And then they blow the whistles, they kick off, and the game happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, John, coming in, our Falcons were 5-2 in road AFC games in the Dan Quinn era. 5-2. The only losses were at New England and at Pittsburgh. That's it. We beat everybody else. And you go lose to the Browns? What? That's beyond confusing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else is confusing? We ran the ball 19 times for 71 yards, no touchdowns, against statistically the worst run defense in the NFL. They had allowed 14 rushing touchdowns, the most in the National Football League coming in. We had none. They were giving up 4.7 yards per carry, John.
Mm-hmm.
We went 3.7 yards per carry. This is just confusing stuff. We should. If you tell me we go up there, we lose 34-31 on a kick by Joseph, all right. To go up there and just get blown out, basically, and run for 71 yards, we ran for half of the total that they were allowing.
Mm-hmm.
They were basically giving up 140 rushing yards a game. We rushed for half of that. And I can't just hear game flow. We fell down. We had to throw to catch up. You should have been running the ball in the first half when it was a close game.
Well, they were trying. And
what I mean is effectively.
Yeah, remember a week ago they went pass to set up run and it worked really well. This week it seemed like they went back to the opposite direction. They ran to set up pass, and then all of a sudden when you got down, you had to throw. You had no opportunity to run the ball at all. I thought in the third quarter you still could have tried to run it some because, as you mentioned, you got enough possessions out of all of that to have an opportunity to go in and continue to run it. You did not do that. We've heard the Devondre Campbell stuff. Now I read a quote, Kelsey Conway, who writes at Falcons.com, from Foye Aluakon after the game. We came out flat, and they took advantage of that. So that's two different Falcons players that have basically acknowledged that they did not come out with the energy or the juice that they need. It's also, and we kind of chronicled it there in the last segment, fourth season in a row where there's been a head-scratch loss for the Falcons. Now, I get it. The NFL, you will have these. You will have games that you go, how the hell did we lose to this team? Guess what? The other 53 guys on the field, they're making a great salary. They're playing some great football. I mean, heck, we got the number two seed 2 years ago because Arizona was in Seattle and knocked off, or was it the Rams? One or the other. They were in Seattle in week 16 and knocked off the Seahawks, basically catapulted us to the number two seed. We ended up having the home field advantage throughout the playoffs when the Cowboys were knocked out. These losses happen in the league. But when you're 4-4 and to hear two different players say we didn't have the energy, that's concerning to me because you're in no position to take anybody lightly at this point.
I mean, I'm like bouncing theories around my own brain right now. This is what John and I do. We laugh, we fart around, but we also get really subatomic on sports when we can. What we have here, John, is this is all obvious stuff. Campbell and Aluakin saying that we came out flat, we took the Browns lightly. It certainly looked like that to the eye test. So why? Is it on the coaches or is it on the players? So that is a debate that I think we need to have. And I'm going to put more of the blame on the players than the coaches. I don't believe that Dan Quinn exhaled.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that.
No, me neither.
Now, I did not like Dan Quinn's game management in the second half of that game. I've been breaking it down for an hour now. But I don't believe that Dan Quinn exhaled. Devondre Campbell and Foye Aluakon just admitted that the team exhaled. What that means is you got the win,
mm-hmm.
and you're kind of feeling good about yourself. You exhale. You let the air out, okay? They should not have exhaled. This was it. You didn't have the opportunity to exhale until the season was over. When you go 1-4 to start a season,
yep.
You are on high alert every minute of every game the rest of the year. But they weren't yesterday. But, John, I want you to kind of – talk about that theory and which side. There's some side deserves more of the blame, mm-hmm. the players or the coaches, when a team comes out flat. And this was a must-win game. They're all must-win games. So someone's to blame. I put more of the blame on the players than the coaches because I don't believe Dan Quinn did anything less in his coaching and preparation for this football game.
Yeah, Dan goes about his business the same way, but I got to put it on the entire – I know this is a cop-out to your question. It's got to go to everybody. When you lose a game like this, I can't exonerate the coaching staff. You guys are good, and I'm just going to put it on the players. No, this is on everybody. From Monday after the Redskins game until the final whistle hit yesterday, you didn't do what you needed to take the steps necessary to win a football game on the road. This is now 2 years in a row against the AFC that you go, we haven't won a game against any one of the teams from the AFC. Think about it last year. You won one last year. You beat the Jets. But you lose to Buffalo. You lose to Miami. The Patriots game, I get it. The Patriots were in the Super Bowl. You lose to them. So you're 1-3 against the AFC East a year ago. This year against the AFC North, you've already lost to Pittsburgh. You've already lost to Cincy, and now you've lost to Cleveland. The only game you have left is against Baltimore, and if you win that game, you're going to be 1-3. You want to talk about where your positioning is in the playoffs or this year potentially out? Look no further than the games you go against teams that you're not familiar with. Why are you struggling with the Browns? Why did you struggle with the Bengals when I watched New Orleans go into their house and completely steamroll them? I don't know what it is, but something about the AFC right now has been a struggle.
Well, a couple things, and you know this. I mean, A.J. Green was out. That certainly changed it a little bit. And the thing is, New Orleans can stop the run. They're phenomenal at it. We can't. We gave up 92 yards on one play to Nick Chubb, mm-hmm. for crying out loud. And I want to I hear you guys, even though I don't hear you right now. And there's people out there going, Campbell, how can you put more blame on the players than the coaches for taking the Browns lightly, and then you're crushing Dan Quinn and all the decisions and stuff? Because the conversation that we're having right now is about preparation. It's about coming into the game. It's about mindset. I'm not talking about decisions and ineffectiveness within the confines of a 60-minute football game. When you come out flat and when you don't take your opponent seriously, mm-hmm. that's on the front end, John.
Right.
That is not during the game. That is a mindset born of the week coming into the game. And so that's the debate that I wanted to have with player and coach. And I don't think Dan Quinn and Steve Sarkisian and Marquand Manuel and Keith Armstrong and the whole gang took Cleveland lightly, mm-hmm. in their preparation for Cleveland. I refuse to believe that. They are coaches. They stay at Flowery Branch till 10:30, 11, 1 o'clock in the morning every night grinding. So they're smarter, and then they can make their team smarter. I don't believe that they went, we can take 5 hours of preparation time off this week and go spend time with family because it's Cleveland. I don't believe that happened. So I believe that – but, John, I don't understand how these players could take Cleveland lightly. You have big-time players on that roster. Mm-hmm. Myles Garrett, one of the best defensive players in football. Baker Mayfield looks like a future Pro Bowler. Nick Chubb looks like a future Pro Bowler. Jarvis Landry's a heck of a football player. They have other guys on defense. By the way, they got Schobert back. He made a million tackles yesterday. Mm-hmm. They should not have taken this team lightly.
But here's where I get
mad. You can take the Bills lightly, New York Jets, but you can't take – you know what I'm saying, John? Like, if we took the Bills lightly and we lost, I'm still mad, but I get it. The Bills are awful. They have been given up for dead. They're a nuclear wasteland. The Browns are not a nuclear wasteland.
Here's where I have problems, though. It wasn't Jarvis Landry making plays. He actually had two catches. It was Breshad Perriman. It's Rod Hollywood Higgins. Those are just got Breshad Perriman's a first-round bust who got cut before his first contract was up. Those are the guys that beat you yesterday. So some of it is physically on the players. They got to do more. But I put it as a collective group. So guys want to sound off, 404-741-0929. Let's go to Eric. He wants to sound off on the Falcons. Eric, what went wrong yesterday?
Guys, I'm going to tell you guys something. These defensive backs that we have are making too much money to give up that many big plays. And it makes me wonder sometimes, was it really the safety that we just lost that were shouldering the load for the back end? Because these defensive backs, Trufant and Alford, I don't know, they're supposed to be all pro. What is going on? I think we need to move in another direction because we're paying them too much money not to execute. Thanks.
Eric, very interesting, and I thought both of them had poor games yesterday. Some of it is the alignment they're in. They're playing cover three, and they're backing out, and you're giving up a lot of underneath throws. They got to make more plays. Rob had a good year a year ago. I think he's regressed a little bit this year. Dez has had his problems as well. it's interesting. They played better coverage a week ago when Isaiah Oliver was out there. And the question about moving on from them, that's going to be an off-season discussion we'll get into, and we'll have to look at money and all of that. But I got a feeling that's one that might come into play because you are paying both those guys a premium salary to be number one and number two corners.
I'm not going to come over the top on Robert Alford. I'm not. Has he been great this year? No. He's been great in games, and he's been lousy in some games. To me, 21 is a way bigger problem than 23. Do you agree?
Yeah.
I think Desmond Trufant is a letdown, a breakdown, in a big play for the other team waiting to happen. I'm still cool with Robert Alford. I am. I've seen enough good stuff from him and this year. Like, can you point out a big play that Desmond Trufant's made for us?
He's broken up a couple of passes.
I mean, I'm just like, is there that one play? I mean, I've seen him drop interceptions. I saw him boot a game against Cincinnati on a drop pick a week ago or 2 weeks ago. He dropped two interceptions in the same game. So I'm going to back off. I don't want to super bang on the guy as a Falcon. I love my birds. I'm ride or die. But I got more of a Trufant problem than an Alford problem.
Yeah, and they had their issues yesterday. Like I mentioned, third down and eight. The Cleveland runs a 9-yard out route in front of him, and the guy's wide open. He makes a catch. Now, some of it, again, is the way that it's set up. Cover three, your corners are taking away deep third. It's expected for your linebackers to get out there, and they weren't. And one of them, I know Desmond Trufant looked at Devondre Campbell like, that's you. You got to be out underneath this route where he can't make this easy throw. But that's a long run for a backer to get there.
John, I love asking these questions because you're on the road with the team. Two questions for you, being the sideline reporter for the Falcons Radio Network. What was the vibe of the team like Saturday night?
Well, I wasn't there Saturday night. I didn't fly up till Sunday.
My bad. Okay, so what was the vibe of the team when you're on the field, they're warming up, fist pounds and just kind of getting hyped for the game?
Yeah, it looks,
was it any different than any other game?
No, it looks like any other game. I mean, they go through the way that they get ready. They're hyped, they're jumping around, they're stretching, they're doing their fist bumps. It's all the same. You know, the body language looks the same. It was when the game kicked off, the body language, like I said, just felt like we were in a haze. And the stadium felt like it was in a haze. It was quiet. It's not like a typical NFL atmosphere. It was, two-thirds full. So I don't know if they played to the surroundings, but they definitely didn't play like they normally do.
I'm glad I asked because our team, John, follow me here. So if you are in, I'm just picking a team. If you're at Pittsburgh, if you're, at Seattle, there's like a pulsation in the building. Okay.
Yes.
And granted, it's a big time home field advantage for them, but there's a vibe, there's a pulsation, and you can plug into that. So there was no pulsation for us to plug into, but that is not an excuse or a justification. You are 4-4. Mm-hmm. You think you're a playoff team. That should be all the motivation that you need.
That's it. You got to wake up and you got to go play some football. Let's go to Dexter in Covington. Dexter, where did you see the ugly, the bad, what in the loss yesterday to Cleveland?
Well, the ugly was when we went for that 4th-and-inch, man, and couldn't get in. That was a problem. We couldn't get in, but we got a 4th and, I don't know how much it was, we had to get the 4th and, I think, 4, whatever, we got that easy. But we get down to the goal line, man, and we can't get in from an inch line. That's the problem. Some got it. I don't know why Matt was in the shotgun on 4th-and-inches, but we got it. That's what we got to get. And Trufant, I don't know why he was running behind Chubb, going the opposite direction. I just can't get that, man. And y'all help me explain that one.
Well, I'll explain what he's doing. He is basically trying to funnel him back. And that's why you see him sort of playing chicken with the wide receiver, not letting Chubb get to the sideline and get pinned inside where nobody can get there. He's trying to kind of slow play it where people can get back. The problem was he got caught flat-footed. Like, you got to keep running to keep it where, all right, if Chubb's getting away from your guys now, you can explode. Once he was flat-footed, Chubb gets even, you're not going to catch him. Nick Chubb can fly, and you saw that yesterday. That was the problem. To go to the first one, I asked the same question. It literally was less than 6 inches from the goal line. You got to be under center. And by the way, Ricky Ortiz was inactive yesterday, so I don't know if it was an injury scenario, if they decided just not to have him up. That's a place where you would have liked to have a fullback in the game that could help you pound in behind or get behind Matt Ryan and shove into the middle of his back and push him into the end zone for a touchdown. I hated him being in shotgun. I don't like anybody being in shotgun down by the goal line.
Should have been a sneak, no doubt about it. He's gotten sneak first downs or touchdowns this year.
And they actually got hurt on third down. They went to hurry up, and Cleveland jumped off sides, which moved him a quarter of an inch. Well, it stopped the momentum of being able to quick sneak him. That was part of the problem as well. Hey, you can join Mike Conti, Jason Longshore, Jimmy Vance for Stoppage Time live at Fido Irish Pub in Buckhead this Tuesday night from 7 to 8. They'll be talking all things Atlanta United with special guests. Plus, there'll be cool Atlanta United prize giveaways on site. Stoppage Time will also be live streamed on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page. We're going to break down the Dogs' win. We'll talk about that. More Falcons conversation as well on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Let's head up the 316 and go between the hedges. This is Rick and John's Dog Walk
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Making good decisions with the ball on his third down plays, and he's getting good protection. The biggest difference to me is the protection. The pocket hadn't melted down on him. He's looking at it and making good decisions. And when we run the right route, which we had a busted route tonight in the red area, and we protect, we're pretty good at getting guys open and throwing the ball and catching the ball.
When you protect Jake Fromm, he has good games. Not a big game for him. 193 yards, couple of touchdowns, completed 13 of 20, but was solid as a rock and helped the Dogs get this victory. This win obviously was powered by the ground game, and that was Kirby Smart, head coach of our Dogs, as you have entered the Dog Walk on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on the Midday Party with Rick and John. But I'm impressed, man. Georgia has connected the dots on a Florida win, a Kentucky win, and an Auburn win. This was a gauntlet coming out of the bye, and they've handled their business beautifully.
Yeah, you handled all three of them like you were supposed to. Florida, you know, nice comeback win for them this week against South Carolina. Always thought they were a little overhyped, and they've kind of proved it. Kentucky let one loss become two. How do you lose to Tennessee? I have no idea. Oh, I know. You're Kentucky. That's how.
They didn't get over the dog loss.
They didn't. And Auburn is a team that's been disappointing. And I thought this game would be close, and it was for a long time until Swift rips off that huge run where he left Auburn guys looking like they were legitimately stuck in cement at various points of the field. He was off and running, and Georgia's 9-1. They'll be 10-1. They'll play Georgia Tech. They'll win that game. They're going to be 11-1. And now you look on the other side, and Tua's banged up. And Alabama offensively the last 2 weeks against Mississippi State and against LSU, two teams that actually have a pulse on defense, they haven't looked the same as they did against earlier opponents in Tennessee and Missouri and Arkansas. So, Georgia, if your defense comes to play like it has the last 3 weeks, in Atlanta, you will have your chance to go to the college football playoffs.
I think, and I know it's like 2 weeks out, I think Georgia Tech's going to give Georgia a ball game. I really, really do. I don't think they beat Auburn by 17. I don't think they're going to beat Georgia Tech by 17 points. I think it'll be a closer game than that because Georgia has been vulnerable to the run. Mm-hmm. Georgia Tech is the best running team in Power 5 football, all of Division I college football. I'm not foretelling a Georgia loss. Don't get me wrong, but You look, these teams played into Georgia's hands. Couldn't really run the ball all that well, so they started throwing.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that, you know, the Georgia pass rush isn't where it needs to be, but Georgia has awesome defensive backs. Mm-hmm. When you talk about Baker and Campbell and LeCount and the rest of them, that is really a strength of that defense. So Georgia Tech's not going to play into that. They're going to force that front seven to make what, John? 50 to 7. I think they ran against you guys 53 times. Mm-hmm. That means you got to make 53 tackles. Coming downhill, offensive lineman cut blocking you and the whole thing. I'm just saying, I think it's going to be a tight game against Tech.
I don't. I think they'll run over Tech. After seeing Tech in person, they're okay. They capitalize on a couple of turnovers this week where Miami just goes, here, you can have the ball at the 8-yard line and go ahead and punch it in. Give credit what's due. I thought Woody's defense played a lot better, got some good pressure. It's a different animal with the Dogs right now. Kirby's got them rolling. He is not going to allow UMass or Georgia Tech to trip up an opportunity to go to the college football playoff. One thing, before we continue breaking down the game that happened the other day, what is Georgia doing? They have messed up in 2029. You know what I'm talking about, Mark? They just scheduled apparently two home and homes. One with Texas in 2028 and 2029.
They'll be back to sucky by then.
But in 2029, 2030, they also play Clemson. So you're out of conferences, Texas and Clemson. I mean, what are you doing, Georgia? Come on. I'm kidding.
Dabble will be retired by then, I think.
Tom Herman might be in trouble if that clown, what's his former coach's
Zach
name?
Zach Smith.
That went, did you see his Twitter yesterday?
I sent the little screenshot you guys sent out.
What a jackwagon.
Well, he's a hockey goon. In hockey, when you're down 4-1, 3-1, what do you do at the end of the game? You start pushing dudes around, getting in fights, and you bring the winning team down into the mud with the losing team. That's all he's doing here. My life sucks. Everything is lost. His life sucks, and he wants to bring all the people whose lives are good down into the muck with him.
And I'm not sure what you tell. I know I was texting back and forth with a lot of people. I don't know if it was from the group text for you or not. But did you see where he had text messaged Tom Herman and was making all these threats, and he sent him the kissy face emoji? And Tom Herman sends back, okay, cool, hook 'em horns. Like in the
I
most,
did not see that.
Oh, yeah, I got to find the text messages from Zach Smith. He sends all this. I'm going to tell that you cheated on your wife, and I'm going to tell that you did this, and I've got pictures. And Tom Herman literally responds, okay, cool, hook 'em horns with the hook 'em horns emoji. It was awesome.
Mark Owens, you had a comment?
How much fun is that going to be? Texas and Georgia, 2028 in Austin, 2029 in Athens.
What year is this right now?
Yeah, no, in 10 years.
I'll be in my 50s.
Years.
I'll be 50.
With even less hair.
No, I can't. How can you have less than zero?
The beard.
I mean, you got the widow's peak going on.
That's why I keep it bald.
But we already have Clemson 2024, the Chick-fil-A kickoff, then 2029 and 2030. And now add 10 years to whatever you're doing right now. And that's when we get to see all of this excitement.
So when are the Clemson games?
2029 and 2030.
Yeah.
Okay, so you overlap in 2029,
yeah,
you have Texas and Clemson?
Yeah, what are you doing?
And your other out-of-conference game is Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
So Tech, Clemson, and Texas in 2029, plus your traditional SEC schedule.
Well, the good thing is you could lose three games that year, and according to the committee, you'll be like eighth.
It'll be eight by then, by the way. It'll be eight teams for the college football playoff by then. I don't make guarantees. Who the hell knows? They have to go to eight by that point, right? There's already a healthy debate about it. 10 years from now, there will be eight teams.
13 years. That will be how long Kirby will have been the coach by 2029, 2030. Will he still be the head coach?
Yeah, he'll still be here.
I think he'll still be there?
No, because what's Kirby, like 44, 45, somewhere in there?
Yeah,
43?
Yeah, it's depressing.
Oh, yeah, he'll still be
You see these Power 5 head coaches that are the same age and or younger than you, and you're like, oh, what am I doing? I mean, Kirby's just a couple years older than us.
Like, Dabo's probably still going to be coaching Clemson at that point, too.
Sean McVay of the Rams is only, like, 37. And he might be the best offensive coach not named Sean Payton in the NFL.
I think Cliff Kingsbury just celebrated his 28th birthday.
I'm pretty sure he did. Pretty sure he did. But an impressive win for Georgia, nonetheless, over the weekend. You take care of Auburn, 27-10. Auburn's one of the more underachieving teams in college football this year, and not because of their loss to Georgia. To be 6-4, they've got a sure loss coming up to Alabama. They'll beat Liberty this week because this is the SEC bye week, in essence. Auburn's going to finish 7-5 on the regular season.
Yeah, but why are they underachieving?
Because they were preseason top 10.
That stuff's wrong all the time, though. Your Canes were preseason top 10.
They're underachieving, too.
I know they are, but my point is, like, nobody had high expectations for Auburn this year.
Nobody expected them to go 7-5.
But underachieving, like, what did we expect? What did we expect?
Like, I think most people thought they would be a 9 or 10 win team this year.
Okay, but that's just sort of overall vibing. I think that was an assumption. But you look at their running backs, not a lot to go on there. You look at their wide receivers, Slayton's eye, Davis's eye, they're not great. Stidham, he's all right, not great. Their offensive line sucks. You add it up, and that's just kind of an team. So they were vastly overrated, obviously.
All right, well, we've seen that throughout the season. How old is Sean McVay?
32.
He's 32?
Unbelievable.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, again, Mark, where did we go wrong in our lives? Is Sean McVay has now got one of the best teams in the NFL, and he's coaching them and having fun. And his quarterback, did you see Halle Berry tweeted Jared Goff? So apparently, we'll get to that coming up in From the Bible.
Oh, nice.
We'll save that, and you'll love it. His response is 100% classic. Back to the Dogs, though. When you say, and you look ahead to Georgia Tech, with the way DeAndre Swift is running the rock, and he was fantastic the other day. Matter of fact, I think you called him out about 4 weeks ago. Not him, but you called out Georgia for not using him. The last three games against arguably their best three opponents, not named LSU, they've gone out and they've used DeAndre Swift, and lo and behold, here comes the running game. Here comes exactly what Georgia wanted to do.
And Holyfield is still the bad bleep that he's been all year. But, John, what we have found out is that DeAndre Swift was hurt. That's what we have found out through the course and the ebb and flow of this season. That dude was playing hurt the first 5 or 6 weeks of the year. Because remember, we'd be like, you know, damn, I mean, Holyfield's taking control of this backfield. You know, Elijah's the number one guy, and he was. But does that mean overall he's a better football player than DeAndre Swift? No, because DeAndre Swift was hurt. He had a groin injury. The groin is healthy, and now we are seeing a first or second round pick in the NFL draft. I mean, NFL teams will go out of their way for his combination of size, electric speed, and that ability to go Shady McCoy on you and put a foot in the dirt and just make you miss. Like the double cutback move he had against Kentucky. When you combine size, speed, and the wiggle, and the make you miss in a phone booth that DeAndre Swift has, he's a first or second round pick in the draft.
And to think he's only a sophomore and will be back a year from now, that is really good to see. Somebody asked, do you guys think realistically they have a shot against Alabama? I think more today than I did 3 weeks ago. And part of that, I just go back to Alabama against defenses that actually can play hasn't been the blow. Don't get me wrong. They won in back-to-back weeks in shutout fashion, have played really well. You were at the game this week. Tua's banged up. I almost guarantee Tua does not take a snap against the Citadel.
I don't make guarantees. I'm going to make a guarantee on this
one. He ain't playing this week.
I'm worried about Tua's knee, dude. He took a beating from Mississippi State. They sacked him and hit him all game long. And on the play where he could barely walk off the field, that's on the knee that he hurt with the brace on, and he got hit right above the knee in that sort of quad knee area. I think Tua's knee is jacked up. I really, really do.
You would ask me 4 weeks ago and I said 90% Alabama wins. I think it's down to about 65% right now, maybe even 60.
And if he doesn't have the
win. If Tua doesn't play, I favor Georgia.
Tua's going to play, but is he half a man at that point? Yeah. I think it's coming around to Georgia a little bit.
Hey, Atlanta football fans, join us on Northside Drive across from the Gold Deck this Sunday for the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Starting at 9 a.m., the guys are going to break down the upcoming game and discuss this week's biggest headlines. Get ready for some football with Sports Radio 92.9. The game. We recap our picks, but Mark, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Atlanta, be ready to shed tears or laugh, one or the other. That's next.
Rick and John have the latest news from college football and want to hear from you. 404-741-0929. This is the College Football Cheat Sheet on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Oh, man. For me, just knowing that Auburn's in my backyard, I mean, it feels great. And now I get to go home and brag to all the Auburn fans. So it's a great win.
Terry Godwin, and that sure sounds good, doesn't it? A lot of dog fans like, yep, I'm doing that right now. Got a lot of Auburn fans, and take that. No, take that. All right, we're Rick and John here. It's our college football cheat sheet brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC tune-up. Another way they make you smile at rsandrews.com. Driving to Tuscaloosa on Friday night with Charity and Summer just rambling down the road. Yeah, I had a cocktail.
How long did it take you?
I don't know, 3.5 hours, something like that.
Okay.
We had a couple of stops. We weren't really trying to make great time. But one of the coolest things in the world is the ESPN app, all right, on my phone. So, because Syracuse is my little team that could, I was watching Syracuse and Louisville on Friday night. And I had Syracuse's kicker in college fantasy and all that kind of stuff. So, I'm locked and loaded on that team. Syracuse handled their business. Louisville should not have made the trip. Their quarterbacks were just dropping the football without even a guy around them, throwing terrible interceptions. Bobby Petrino, John, he was holding his play call sheet up in front of his face. It was akin to Saints fans back in the day putting the bag over their head. He didn't want to be seen on camera associated with the poop that was on the football field. And a long story to tell you this. I told Summer and Charity, not that they cared. I said, Bobby Petrino's about to get fired for this game right here.
And the best part of it, he did get fired. And the even more funny part that goes along with this, and Preacher Man and I were talking about this before the show. I'm assuming they had recorded the coach's show, but the scroll while he's doing the coach's show is him getting fired. So, like, he's up there rambling about Juwan Pass or whatever other crap quarterback they threw out there, and the scroll is saying Bobby Petrino has been fired as head coach of Louisville. It could not have happened to a nicer person. And I say that with every bit of sarcasm associated. He's one of the worst people that's ever been associated with Atlanta sports. He's somebody that I think everybody that was a Falcons fan or is a Falcon fan, we can't stand him. Granted, he's going to make a ton of money in a buyout and whatnot from Louisville. That guy's gone. Good for you, Louisville. You got rid of a low-class, terrible coach this year in Bobby Petrino.
And there are people from Malik Cunningham is the other QB for
Louisville.
For Louisville, and I believe he's a Georgia kid, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. I don't want to look it up. I don't care. That's their problem. So Jeff Brohm, the Purdue coach, has already been mentioned as what? Didn't he have a job with Louisville?
Was he
their play caller?
He played at Louisville.
He played at Louisville. Uh-huh. That's right. And there was some kind of connection. But he runs a spread offense in the Big Ten. I know, it's weird. And oh, by the way, Purdue went to my guys, Minnesota, and got beat 41-10. Thank God I did not start DJ Knox or David Blau in college football fantasy. I would be on the outside of the playoffs looking in had I done that. Some just told me it's going to be cold weather. Nah, I don't trust that thing going on up there. And they put 10 points on the board. But Jeff Brohm does have a really good offense. We saw what they did to Ohio State. And they have tilted the machine. The Missouri game earlier this year, I think Blau threw for 500 yards. So I believe Brohm to Louisville would be a good fit.
That is the obvious choice when it comes to Louisville. The question is, does Brohm want to leave and go back to the alma mater? I know a lot of times that pull is very strong for kids and for the opportunity to go back and try to resurrect what had been a really good program. Petrino had them 2 years ago with Lamar Jackson on the verge of the college football playoff, and then in 2 years with Lamar gone, it's gone off the rails immediately.
Real quick, and we can get to our picks, John. The ACC to me is, I wouldn't call it a like pass-happy conference like the Big 12 or the Pac-12, but it's a balanced conference. There are teams that really throw the rock and run the spread in the ACC. The spread in the Big Ten is never going to win big. It is never going to win big in the Big Ten.
It's winning big at Ohio State.
Oh, good point. Well, they're right. Good point. I kind of put them at like just this separate deal. You're right. But a team like Nebraska and Purdue, who's not getting the hot shots of an Ohio State, I don't think the spread is going to take the Big Ten by storm with their athletes relative to the Ohio State
athletes. I disagree with Nebraska. Nebraska, because of the program they have been, will eventually get recruits again. That offense will work. They've scored points in the last 3 or 4 weeks now that they're healthy and Adrian Martinez is playing. I think the spread will work at Nebraska. Scott Frost is going to get the right kind of guys. But theirs is a power spread. They want to run it, let their quarterback run quite a bit, but still spread you out and be able to throw it around. As Mark Richt once said, they want to spread you out and pound you.
That remains to be seen, dude. I haven't been a fan of Scott Frost coaching with that team this year.
That's a bad football. He took over. You want to talk about no talent?
He's been in their way in a couple of games. Northwestern is representing the Big Ten in the Big Ten championship, their side of their division in the Big Ten championship game. If Scott Frost would have gotten out of his quarterback's way against Northwestern, they would have beaten them, and Northwestern would not be in the Big Ten championship game. I'm not a fan of Scott Frost coaching.
I think he'll be just fine in Nebraska. We knew this year was 6-6 at best for the Cornhuskers. Let's recap our picks from the weekend. Coming in, Rick Kamla, 21-30-3. John Michaels, 28-25-1. And Randy McMichael, 27-20-1. And he took a week off. I think we should make him have 6 losses for not showing up that week, but we're going to be nice. Rick, what did you have in college?
Why would you say that?
Because that would have me in first place, and I'm a competitive son of a gun.
You're also a cheater. He didn't lose those 6 games.
Well, that's a him problem. All right, what do you have in college football this week?
Oregon, you're dead to me, okay? Utah's quarterback, Tyler Huntley, snaps his collarbone. Utah's running back, Zach Moss, I believe tore his ACL in practice on Wednesday. The whole thing, boom, drop a bomb on him. Boom, drop a bomb on him. Oh, Oregon, they lose 32-25. Way to go, guys. Way to go. They're dead to me. I will never bet on them again or pick them again. I also had
– Did you have Ohio State?
I did. I had Ohio
That's
State.
That's a win.
That was a layup.
-3.5. Sorry, Deshaun.
Crap, I can't. Preacher Man?
Preacher Man's got the picks back there.
I just wanted to bang on Oregon right there.
You had Ohio State, Oklahoma State, Oregon.
Yes. You won with Oklahoma State.
So Oklahoma State.
You go
What in the hell was that point spread being
21?
At 21?
I have no idea.
It's ridiculous. Steve Merrill even agreed with me on Friday.
In college football, I had Syracuse -20-something. They won by 30. That's a win. I had Ohio State layup game -3.5. That's a win. And I also had Alabama -23.5. Covered by a half. 3-0 in college football. Booyah. What did Randy Mack do?
Randy had Syracuse -21.
1-0.
Notre Dame -16.
2-0.
LSU minus 13.
Did not win that one. He was 2-1. LSU only won by 7.
We said over to Arkansas.
Stay away, said to stay away from that. What do we have in the NFL, Preacher Man? What did Rick have?
All right, Ricky had the Falcons minus 6, Eagles minus 7, Green Bay minus 9.5.
So you go
Green Bay was a layup.
1-2 in the NFL.
I am out on Philadelphia. I've been hitting them this home field advantage. I got the best home field advantage. Blah! Philadelphia, you suck. I will never pick you again. I promise.
So you're 24-33-3. You go 3-3.
Looking at the bright side, three consecutive weeks of not losing.
Yeah, that's a good start. What did I have, Preacher Man, in the NFL? Because I truly forgot.
All right, Johnny Michaels, you had Eagles minus 7.
Loss.
Chargers minus 10.
Win, yes.
Jets minus 7.
I took the Jets.
You did.
You had the Jets.
What was I thinking?
You weren't on that one.
All right. I go 4-2 on the week. That puts me at 32-27-1. I'm not 5
what
games.
What were you doing taking the Jets?
They were playing the Bills.
But that's like off limits. I mean, it just is. Like, they're two crappy teams. They don't care.
It was a coin flip. I mean, give them a break.
No, I'm just saying, like, the Jets should have won and covered.
Yeah.
But you're it's going through your brain right now. He's like, I know. I put confidence in the Jets. I should not have done that.
I'm an idiot. But again, I go 4-2, so I feel pretty good about myself. What did Randy Mack do?
Randy Mack had the Bears minus 6.5.
Win.
Jags plus 3.
They didn't cover that,
nope.
Did they? That's a loss.
They might have covered plus 3. That might have been a push. Was that game 29-26?
I have to look at the score of that one.
I will look it up. That might have been a push for the great Randy Mack.
And he had the Chargers minus 10.
Yep, that was the push for Randy. It was 29-26 Colts over Jaguars.
So he goes 2-0-1.
He should have covered that. There were all kinds of kicking failings in that game for the Jags.
Or does he go 2-1-1-1?
We had Syracuse, Notre Dame, and LSU.
No, what did he do in the NFL? He had the Chargers Bears win.
Jags.
So he's 2-0-1. So Randy goes 4-1-1, and he is in the lead.
I'm just copying his picks next week.
I'm telling you, Randy has been on fire. It's like Georgia right now. He just won't lose. Neither will Atlanta United. Bring it on, Red Bulls. We move to the Eastern Conference Finals. We go around the 404 next on Sports Radio 92.9. The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.